From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. You're with Trish Wood on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, indeed you are. This is Trish Wood, and you are on the fringe with me today. And I just want to, if I sound out of breath, I just want to explain something that just happened to me. It's important, and it says a lot about the way we live, not just something that affected me, but it's affecting a lot of people. And that is the noise level in cities right now. How do they expect us to live with this? I live and work out of a studio in Midtown Toronto, which can be silent for 2 hours, and then all of a sudden there is a convergence of construction vehicles. And the back part of the studio that I use can sometimes be rendered almost uninhabitable with the noise. There are, I think, 10 40-story condominiums going up. The city and the province of Ontario has handed the city of Toronto over to condominium developers. I understand they've done so in the name of green density, which, you know, green is fueling all of the stuff in our world that's not working right now. And what I want to say about it is it's not just an inconvenience if you happen to do a radio show out of Midtown Toronto. This goes on virtually every day of the week. So there's no respite from noise. And I know maybe it feels like a small thing, but let me tell you, exposure to noise that you cannot control is not good for your nervous system, and it's not good for your mental health, right? And we now live in a world where I don't believe that the people who govern us have our best interests at heart anymore. There used to be laws around how much noise you could make and when you could make it and where you could make it. I feel like all bets are off now. It's an absolute assault. I went running out. A woman from another building was standing on the sidewalk right where I was headed, where this construction crew was, in the very same boat, saying, "You guys can't do this on a Saturday afternoon. What are you doing?" And they said, "Yes, we can. Legally, it's allowed. So everybody in the hood here has been disrupted and disturbed and probably been given a little bit of anxiety by this crew that has descended. But anyway, good for us. They have now gone away, so they're not impeding my ability to do the radio show." That was the extra tension, right? That I couldn't do my show for y'all. I just want to do a couple of updates from this week. It's been a really incredible week on many fronts. Let me say our guests first. In hour one, we have the independent foreign correspondent named Vanessa Abili. She's an independent journalist and photographer who's worked on the ground in Syria, Egypt, Iraq, and Palestine, while also covering the conflict in Yemen since 2015. This lady knows her stuff. In 2019, Vanessa was among recipients of the Serena Shim Award for Uncompromised Integrity in Journalism. Vanessa contributes regularly to Mint Press News, Russia Today, UK Column, The Last American Vagabond, and other independent media outlets. And you can support her work on Patreon, and you probably should. She's important because, obviously, with the Ukraine-Russia conflict underway and the fire hose of propaganda that we are being subjected to, we need our independent voices. And she is one. She's a very, very brave human being. She and Eva Bartlett, who I've also spoken to, and Eva has been in and out of Ukraine, and she's reporting the counter narrative, right? And of course, she's been accused of all sorts of terrible things, but I trust her. I trust independent reporters on the ground. Then for hour two, another great guest today, Michael P. Singer. If you're someone who's really been following the nightmare of COVID and the COVIDians, and the inexplicable public policies that were brought to bear on all of us that have done more harm than good. And I'm so sick of correcting the idea. People say, "Oh, kids have lost so many years of education because of COVID." No, not because of COVID. Not because of the virus. Because of the stupid people who made public health policies without considering the collateral damage, right? to the kids. We all were warning about this, shouting from the rooftops. Nobody was listening. Or worse, they were listening and they didn't care. So Michael P. Singer has been a very, very brave, well-researched, and interesting voice on COVID mania. He's an attorney based in San Francisco, author of the book Snake Oil, How Xi Jinping Shut Down the World. He's also been researching the influence of the Chinese Communist Party on the world's response to COVID-19 since March 2020. So he's our two, and I'm also looking forward to getting to him. But let's just do a couple of updates on things, right? Steve Bannon was sentenced to 4 months yesterday. Regardless of your politics or your feelings about Trump or MAGA, whatever, wow, I mean, contempt of Congress is a Eric Holder, who I believe was the Attorney General under Barack Obama. Same charge. I think the same charge. He did the same thing, whether he was charged or not, but no jail time, nothing, right? There is no, absolutely no doubt now that the Democrats in Washington are weaponizing the pillars of democracy, including the FBI and the Justice Department, and everything else they can get their mitts on against their political opponents. This is really dangerous, no matter what side of the aisle you are on. Sending Steve Bannon to jail for 4 months is absolutely absurd, and it is corrupt on its face. So, you know, I think we need to really start focusing, and I will on this show, I'll have some guests on to talk about this, focusing on what is happening in the run-up to the American elections. The other interesting thing I'm going to say before we go to Vanessa is just that there was a story, I think yesterday, maybe the day before, about Alex Jones, and now they're going after him for like $1 billion or something, right? He's the one who, you know, he is a conspiracy nut. Actually, a lot of his conspiracies have come true, but he does push things too far, and he did say that Sandy Hook was a false flag or some dumb thing. And frankly, anybody who believed it was like, whatever. But anyway, and you shouldn't do that. Yes, that is bad. I agree. Guys like Alex Jones should not be doing shows saying that Sandy Hook didn't happen and that the people were crisis actors, etc. I completely agree with that. But what is up with everybody cheering on the ruination of this guy, right? This is, again, in my view, it's probably maybe unpopular with some of the listeners of this show and other people, but my view is that obviously he deserved to pay probably for it. But this is ludicrous. And again, this is another example of the courts going after people who are dangerous to them because, yes, Alex Jones was wrong about Sandy Hook. He was not wrong about a lot of things that would be perceived as a threat by the mostly left-leaning judiciary in America right now. It's an absurd argument. And let me just say, here's the thing about free speech, folks. If you are a free speech nearly absolutist as I am, you have to also protect people you don't like very much for saying things that you don't like. That idea has been tossed in the trash by the political left. We all know this. I talk about it on the show a lot. But that is what you're seeing with Alex Jones. Like, I had a discussion with somebody. I said, no, you know, of course, the Sandy Hook, that was wrong. Those poor people lost kids, and it's, you know, this just makes it worse. I agree with that. It was an awful thing for him to do. But let's, like, he didn't kill the kids. You know, he added a layer of upset to something that is, like, way worse than what he did. Right? So what is this $1 billion, trillion? I mean, it's insanity, and people are cheering it on. And you know what it tells me? This is what it tells me, and this is what's dangerous about it besides a corrupt judiciary. That is that people now on the left are incapable of seeing nuance and understanding that sometimes a principle is bigger than the hurt feelings that are kind of directly in front of their faces, right? They don't seem to be able to entertain even in a theoretical sense, ideas that are more complex than he's a good guy, he's a bad guy. And we see that in the support for the Ukraine war, right? Zelensky is Churchill and Putin is Hitler, and that's how they view the world. They don't see nuance. They don't want to know the history of it. And I think that we are seeing that it really exploding in the case against Alex Jones. And also the Emergencies Act hearings underway in Ottawa this week, more absurd stuff. And all of it is showing that the Prime Minister did not have an appropriate reason to lower the boom on the citizenry who were protesting. It's actually like it's a farce right now what people are saying, including the head of the OPP. Seems like a decent Ontario Provincial Police, for people who don't know, seems like a decent chap who was saying, yeah, well, no, we didn't really see any security threats there. So what they were reduced to, I think I said this last week, one of the witnesses talked about microaggressions. Really, like we're invoking the Emergencies Act over a microaggression. Please explain to me even what a microaggression is. So that's the world we live in now, right? It's about hurt feelings and not understanding the bigger picture and why this particular thing that we want to punish so badly, maybe we should take a step back and look at the repercussions, right? And that nowhere is that more important than in foreign policy. And I believe, and I think Patrick Henningsen, who's doing some really terrific commentary on Ukraine, Russia, I think he would agree with that, that the people who are running the U.S. State Department and American foreign policy in Ukraine and the dumping of money and the sending of weapons and the ratcheting up the rhetoric, they are amateurs. These are not people whose approaches and whose way of going about helping Ukraine is something that I can even get on board with. They're not serious people. I mean, they're laughably bad, actually. And if nukes were not in the mix at the moment, it would almost be absurdly funny. Well, it wouldn't be because there's civilians dying, obviously, so it would never be funny. But again, let me use the word farce about these guys. I mean, you know, Tony Blinken, Jake Sullivan, the stuff they say, it's absurd. Of course, Biden is off the charts, kind of demented, right? New evidence last night of him almost falling asleep in the middle of an interview. I mean, my God. So all of us need to be smarter, but more is the point, we need to be electing smarter, more courageous people than the people we have in government in Western democracies. I mean, Bojo might be coming back to the UK. Ah, and if not Bojo, then I think his name is Jeremy Hunt, a guy who is a zero COVIDian. I mean, ugh. Anyway, let's move on. I've got some more updates, but I'll do them at the top of the second hour because I want to get to Vanessa Beely. She was going to be on the show last week, and because she's in all of these exotic places, we couldn't connect. There was some kind of either an internet or a phone or some kind of problem we had anyway, but we definitely wanted to speak to her about the work she does as a foreign correspondent and her view of media more generally. So we got her back and here she is. And so here is Vanessa Beely. Where are you, Vanessa?
I'm actually in Damascus in Syria. I've been living here for the last 3 years and working here for the last 7 years.
Okay, well, we got you this time and I'm so happy about that.
Yeah, you've got us this time.
Yeah, really happy about that. So I guess I can't get into this without just asking you, I guess, generally, what it's like for you as an independent journalist who is really committed to telling the truth, watching the absolute dumpster fire that legacy media has become now. I mean, because you go to places, you actually, like you do what real reporters, they go to places and they see things. Mm. And clearly what legacy media reports, especially on foreign stories, does not line up with the facts on the ground. So I guess just as a human person, as a reporter, how do you deal with living in this current reality?
Well, I mean, you were talking about Alex Jones, and what I find to be the ultimate irony here is that for years they've described him, they've ridiculed Alex Jones, as you said, as a conspiracy nut, They've smeared him, discredited him, declared him as non-influential, and now suddenly he's being fined. You know, I think it's $1 billion it works out at, right? When is the mainstream media going to be fined for consistently lying to the populations of the countries where they control the information release? When are they going to be fined $1 billion for taking us to war in Iraq, in Libya, in Syria, in interfering in the sovereign affairs of countless nations, more than 50 nations? You know, I mean, this is, and yeah, you're absolutely right. We're reaching a point where people will cheer on the censorship of free thought and free speech because their feelings are hurt. And this is actually coming through into legislation in the UK now through the online harms bill, which will effectively penalize journalists if they hurt your feelings.
What?
So we are, I mean, really, you should look it up. I mean, the UK legislation now against free speech is entering the realms of Nazism. You know, control of elections, control of education, control of free speech. And it is now literally becoming a war crime to present a view that diverges from legacy media. I mean, for example, in August this year, there was a roundtable discussion in Ukraine that was spearheaded by the National Security and Defense Council of Ukraine, but it was effectively set up by the US State Department. And as part of that meeting, it was declared that journalists who were opposing the US dominant narrative in Ukraine should be declared information terrorists, and they should know that they will have to answer to the law as war criminals. So, you know, as an independent journalist, I am not funded by any government or any governmental agency. I'm completely funded by public donations, and that can be as little as $1 per month on my various platforms. When you are presenting the facts from on the ground, as you said, when you are transmitting the voices, that's very much what Eva Bartlett and I do. We transmit the voices of the people that are being disappeared by legacy media, whether it's in Syria or Palestine or Ukraine or Iraq or Yemen, in order that those voices are heard and that their views are heard and that they're not ignored, then we can be declared as information terrorists. We can be smeared and discredited. We can have our financial ability to survive either curtailed or completely destroyed. PayPal now is bringing in new rules that if they disagree with something that we publish, then they can start fining us. So PayPal is not only shutting down media outlets like Mint Press News, like the, I think it's the Free Speech Project in the UK, Toby Young, has since been reinstated. But now they're actually saying, look, if we see something that we don't like, in other words, if they see something that doesn't comply with Washington's narratives, then they can start fining us.
Well, we
not
went
only
through
once, by the way, they can fine for every piece of information they disagree with.
How do we get here, Vanessa? You know, and this happened also, as I'll just revert to the, you know, the Freedom Convoy, that, you know, they were raising a lot of money. I mean, I'm telling you, if I'm sure that our prime minister was absolutely freaking out because they were rolling through millions and millions of dollars. They were originally on GoFundMe, and every time there was some kind of a stoppage in the funding and they had to restart, they would be up to $4, 5, 6, 7, 8 million. And so the prime minister can say, excuse me, he can say as loudly as he wants, they are a fringe minority, which is why I call this show On the Fringe, by the way. but the dollar amounts don't lie. And the idea that they put forward, which was that, oh, they were raising big money, not from individual Canadians and Americans who were sympathetic, but it was, you know, it was far right money from Proud Boys. That's been proven to be an absolute lie. But what happens in these situations, as you well know, I'm sure, they lie about something, they get what they want because of the lie, and by the time the lie is exposed, it doesn't matter anymore. They got what they wanted,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
That's what they did with the convoy. They defunded them, and then they went after the bank accounts of people who'd given them money. This is a very, very big problem we're facing now around information, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the classic example here in Syria, of course, is the alleged chemical attack in Douma, east of Damascus, in April 2018. I was in Damascus both before and after the attack, and Eva Bartlett arrived just after the attack, from memory. And of course, that story led to the unlawful aggression by the US, the UK, and France when they bombed alleged chemical weapon sites, one of which was a cancer research center in Damascus, and put civilian lives at risk before the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, the OPCW, had even been able to get to the site of the alleged attack to carry out its investigation. And then when the original inspectors who went with the team to investigate the event challenged the final report put out by the OPCW and said that it had been corrupted and that it didn't reflect their findings on the ground, which was basically no chemical weapon use, not even chlorine, which was, you know, they kind of downgraded from sarin to chlorine fairly rapidly when they realized that the sarin story wasn't really gonna go anywhere. But even the chlorine story was completely discredited by those inspectors who've yet not been given a voice. They've not been allowed to air their grievances against the OPCW. There's been a complete shutdown of their evidence and of their voices and of their claims that the OPCW report was corrupted. So you're absolutely right. You know, people still have in their minds that, well, President Assad carried out chemical attacks against his own people, while actually all three of the major chemical attacks have been discredited. That's Eastern Ghouta 2013, Khan Sheikhoun in 2017, and Douma in 2018. You know, evidence, that mountain of evidence against all three, demonstrating that it was far more likely either to have been a false flag, or that in 2013 the chemical weapons were used by the, in speech marks, the rebels or the terrorist groups against civilians in Eastern Ghouta. It's extraordinary.
I'm desperate to follow up with you on that. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with Vanessa Bealey, who is coming to us today from Damascus, Syria. Back in a moment.
Michael Parker on TNT Radio.
All over social media today, people were talking about how Saudi Arabia is throwing Joe Biden under the bus. Well, you know what? I mean, that's the way it goes. And he kind of had that coming. And they have this statement that basically said, yes, you know, the Biden administration asked us to not cut back on oil production before the midterm, basically asking a foreign country to interfere with our election. Well, they didn't want to do that. And I don't want to be naive here. I think that these kind of things probably often happen between countries, not just about energy, but about other things. You know, hey, I got your back. If you got mine, could you do this for us? Dot, dot, dot. But this time, Saudi Arabia, the fact that they did this, I think, says a lot. This is another piece of evidence that the emperor has no clothes, and Joe Biden is kind of this joke on the global stage. It's like the Saudi Arabians can basically say, no, we're not going to do that, and we're especially not going to do it to help you going into this election.
Deprogram with Michael Parker on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds, and they do it by the types of hosts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
Freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of choice, freedom of assembly, freedom of health. The voice of freedom is TNT Radio.
Hey there, Trish Wood here, and I'm back with a very special guest today. It is Vanessa Bealey, who I admire very much. She is the real deal. She is a foreign correspondent, and she's independent. And she does not toe the narrative party line for anybody. She tells what she sees on the scene and reports it as best she can. And I'm assuming she takes some risks doing that too. So I'm really glad to have her. We were talking about the gas attacks in Syria, which I don't know as much about as I should. I kind of read a bit of Max Blumenthal's done some good stuff over at Gray Zone on it too. But what I remember about that, I think, is this. And it was horrifying to me. And that was that when President Trump was elected and was pretty clearly trying to not get into the regime change wars. Obviously, he's a flawed guy and failed on many fronts. But that seemed to be his goal. And he did not want to go into Syria early on. And am I right in thinking that we could lay a false flag at the feet of people who wanted to force Trump to engage in Syria in a military way? Is that what was going on?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually talked about this fairly recently with Alex Craner, who's another amazing analyst I highly recommend. My feeling has always been the British is very much the intelligence behind these destabilization or regime change projects. The US is the military and financial muscle. Alex actually described it, I don't know if you remember, in Mad Max 3, the giant with the little dwarf on his shoulder doing all the directing. And it's the perfect analogy, actually. I think mine were a bit more sinister, but that just kind of sums it up perfectly. Basically what happened, it was really interesting for me, when Khan Shaehun, the alleged chemical attack happened, just prior to that, Trump had actually been making noises about withdrawing militarily from Syria. And actually he did make those noises a couple of times. And the knockback in the British media was quite extraordinary. They were enraged. They were enraged that Trump might make this decision because, you know, the war against Syria has been very much a war against Russia. And it was very much instigated, as it has been since Syria achieved its independence from the French mandate in 1946. It's been very much instigated by the MI6 and the British. To break up the relationship between the Soviet Union and Syria. And then, of course, after the fall of the Soviet Union, the relationship between Russia and Syria. So when Trump sort of made this announcement in his inimitable manner that the US would withdraw, almost immediately, the White Helmets, who are predominantly a British military intelligence construct that were embedded with the armed groups dominated by al-Qaeda inside Syria and were there to produce the propaganda against the Syrian government and allies during the conflict and really to produce the chemical weapon productions. Right. And almost days after Trump's announcement, suddenly there's a chemical attack in Khan Shaehun, and it's the White Helmets running around in sandals dealing with sarin. And making these sort of incredible pronouncements that the Syrian government or the Syrian army had used sarin against their own people. And of course, there was the usual problem with the chain of custody of the samples, which were all handled basically by the White Helmets that are, as I said, an auxiliary to the armed groups. Really, Al-Qaeda, even members of the White Helmets themselves were White Helmet leaders. There is documentation to demonstrate that. And so then all of a sudden, you know, Trump was on the back foot. He couldn't be seen to be withdrawing from Syria at a time that allegedly the Syrian government had carried out another chemical attack. And he then launched, I think it was the Tomahawk missiles against various Syrian military bases, including the T4 airbase near Homs to the north of Damascus. He didn't actually do an awful lot of damage. And the rumors on the ground here were that most people were well informed in advance of the attack. So whether that was Trump sort of basically saying, okay, guys, I need to make a show of, you know, telling you off for the use of chemical weapons. Yeah. That would be pure speculation on my side. But looking at the facts on the ground, it does look very much as if that was the situation. But certainly, looking at the media reports, looking at the response from the White Helmets and how the British were pushing for the US to stay in Syria, not only to stay in Syria, but to effectively punish the Syrian government for this alleged use of chemical weapons, even though, of course, the OPCW had overseen the destruction of all the remnants of chemical weapons that the Syrian government had inside Syria, I think, in 2014, so after the 2013 attacks.
So what is, there's so many things awful about that story, but you know, for me, if you kind of pull the lens way back, what it mostly is grotesquely anti-democratic, because, you know, Trump was elected by a lot of people in America who were sick of the regime change stuff. Like, they just, people have had enough. They know they never work out. They're never good for anybody involved, especially the American people, and certainly not the people who were bombed and frequently destroyed by these American kind of misbegotten military adventures. And so for them to manipulate this, like, it just, I remember how Trump used to talk about the deep state, and everybody said, "Oh, he's nuts." Mm-hmm. That's what this is, right? It means that we're not going to let you govern toward the policies that you spoke about during the campaign and for which you were elected. We're going to back you into a corner with the bodies of gassed children. I remember seeing them, and I also remember hearing a story about how Ivanka, I think that's his daughter, went to him and said, "Daddy, you know, we have to intervene. Now they're gassing children," and apparently that was really the catalytic event for him. I mean, it's like, we cannot, for Trump, good or ill, we cannot get the leaders we want who say they're going to represent what we want. And I think never has that been more clear than right now. And that COVID, actually, one good thing that came out of COVID is that it showed to us that they actually don't care about us at all. And not only do they not care, they're inept. They don't know what they're doing, right? So those kind of false flaggy things are absolutely credible to me, because they serve a purpose of some very powerful people. I want to move to Ukraine, because I know you've been in and out of there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if you could give us an update. I know you're not there now, but an update on where you think we are right now. My sense is that Russia is going to kind of up the ante a bit now because of the Nord Stream and the bridge and stuff. Is that kind of where we're headed, or do you have different information than that?
No, I mean, I think what you're seeing at the moment is, again, sort of political agendas at play, of course. I mean, you know, we know that this isn't a war between Ukraine and Russia. This is a war between NATO, dominated by the US, and Russia. You know, and Ukraine and the people of Ukraine, while the US and NATO are crying their crocodile tears about the fate of the Ukrainian people. Of course, for them, the Ukrainian people are cannon fodder, right?
Yeah.
They are their proxies against Russia. They are there to weaken Russia. That is their role. And it doesn't matter to the US or to NATO how many Ukrainians die in that process. And what you're seeing now is this, there have, of course, been what are effectively terrorist attacks, the first against the Kerch Bridge, the bridge that links Crimea to the mainland.
Yeah.
That has been proven to have been carried out actually by, or to at least have been planned by British intelligence. There was an article by Kit Clarenberg at Grey Zone that went into details about the presentation that had been made showing the project and how it was to be carried out. And of course, in the end, effectively, it was a suicide bomber truck filled with explosives. There were other theories. There were theories that it might have been an underwater drone, or there were various theories going on. But effectively, what it was an attack on a civilian infrastructure, which at the same time, of course, has been going on since 2014 with the Kiev ultra-nationalist forces attacking civilian infrastructure. I think in the last, between February and October, more than 10,000 houses, civilian houses in the Donbass have been destroyed, and more than 2,000 civilian infrastructure installations have been destroyed. So, you know, they're not, again, the parallels between Syria and Ukraine are very clear to me. The Kiev forces, backed by NATO, of course, and the various foreign mercenaries that have swelled their numbers, they're not attacking military installations. What they're doing is continuing the ethnic cleansing program that has been going on since 2014 against the Russian-speaking anti-Nazi, anti-Maidan people in the east of Ukraine, and also against any Ukrainian nationals or foreign nationals that have Ukrainian citizenship who have objected to the regime that was imposed upon them in 2014 by Victoria Nuland, effectively. All of these people that have objected, there has been a systematic pogrom of assassination, disappearance, execution, imprisonment, detainment of all opposition. I mean, Ukraine is portrayed to us as, this democratic beacon that is defending the tenets of democracy against the authoritarianism of President Putin and Russia. That's a complete reality inversion. So I think what we're going to see now, we've seen a lot in the media fanfaring the Ukrainian advances into Kherson, which was one of the Donbass areas that basically voted to join Russia. So there has been mass evacuation in the last few days. There's also been shelling of the pontoons, evacuating civilians from Kherson to various refugee camps to safety, basically. So the actual pontoons evacuating civilians have been shelled in the last 2 days, and there have been a number of deaths, including children. And so much is being made of this Ukrainian advance. But what is upcoming, and I think that is very much related, of course, to the election process leading to the US elections in November, isn't it, this year? Biden, he's looking for two things. He's looking for success in Ukraine, and he's looking to bring down the prices at the petrol pumps in the US. Well, he's failed on that because he's come up against Saudi Arabia and OPEC, who are basically saying, no, we're not playing ball. We're not going to subsidize the prices so that you can look good pre-election. So now, of course, he's throwing the sanctions at Saudi Arabia, which is that's just suicide for the US. You know, Saudi, which has been their ally One of the worst human rights records globally, by the way, but has been their ally in the destabilization of the Middle East, particularly, of course, in Syria. And but now, of course, Saudi Arabia is kind of dead to say, no, we're not playing this game. And so what happens? You know, Biden starts throwing sanctions at them. I mean, it's almost becoming comedic. You know, even us as independent observers were sanctioned. That's the first thing they say. You know, I had a letter written by a kind of an arch enemy of mine, an MEP, French MEP, Nathalie Loiseau, who wrote to the head of foreign affairs for the European Parliament, Joseph Borrell, demanding that all the independent observers who came to observe the referendum in Donbass should be sanctioned, but naming me because of my interference with their plans in Syria. I'm interpreting what she said, and my interference in their plans in Ukraine, basically, that I should be individually sanctioned. So, we are all in danger of being sanctioned if we point out what our governments are doing to us.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
You mentioned the Freedom Convoy. They were sanctioned effectively. Right. Yeah,
absolutely. And crushed, you know, and actually proves the point I just made too. The lies about that were told about them are now being exposed. But who cares now, because the convoy is over. Right. So they tell the lies that they need to tell to end the thing. And now they're like, well, you know, maybe they'll pay for it. They won't. I mean, it doesn't seem to have affected our prime minister's popularity rating at all with a certain ilk. But I'm going to take a break and we're going to come back in a moment with Vanessa Beely. I want to talk to you about Zelensky himself. He's got this kind of slippery image that is clearly being polished by American legacy media. So I want to talk to you about what you think of him and where this thing is going. So we'll be back in a mo with Vanessa Beely.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
If you're a regular listener of my show here on TNT Radio, or if you've heard these daily abbreviated segments, you're well aware that the United States stands at a crossroads. Either we continue down the radical leftist road that will lead to the end of the country as we have known it, or we reverse course and return to the sanity, stability, and law and order that has guided us as a nation. The latest example of where we are now comes from Austin, Texas. Prosecutors believe that Johnny Charles Ebbs V beat his pregnant girlfriend to the point that she lost her baby back in 2019, and he will not serve any jail time. You heard me right. Ebbs allegedly assaulted his pregnant girlfriend during an argument. The warrant said that he punched her in the stomach and screamed, "F you and this baby, you aren't going anywhere." Ebbs accepted a plea deal, which says that he has not been found guilty at the time of sentencing and will have his offense dismissed if he doesn't violate his probation. Let me repackage a line that recently got Donald Trump in hot water. Wake up, America, before it's too late. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
You took the first step and quit smoking, but even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
When the whole world seems turned upside down, we sort through it together. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
And that is exactly what Vanessa Beely and I are doing. We're sorting through it for y'all. I just want to say that you should give TNT Radio a follow. We are on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk TNT Radio. And you can talk to me, Trish Wood, at trishwood@tntradio.live. Do get in touch. I love to hear from people. Vanessa, I want to ask you about Zelensky because you can, what seems to be kind of leaking out despite the mainstream media's desperate attempts to craft his image, including that Vogue magazine spread, which just kind of ruined it for me. I used to love Vogue, but, you know, anyway. I hear from various people these very kind of tyrannical things that he's doing. He's going after the media. He keeps apparently an enemies list. Tell me about was he always like this, or has war turned him into this, in your view?
I think he was put in place very much with the war against Russia in mind. He was put in by a guy called Igor Kolomoisky, who is heavily involved with the Hunter Bidens, with the MH17 scandal, with the, you know, he's the linchpin to all the money laundering and the corruption within Ukraine itself. And it's him who basically promoted Zelensky as an actor and then, you know, got him elected. And of course, Zelensky got in very much on a kind of let's make peace with Russia program, right, which was very quickly quashed by the Nazi elements that have been fostered and allowed to grow by NATO inside Ukraine. And I would remind people, this isn't something that just started in 2014. This is something that started back at the end of World War II, when you had operations like Operation Paperclip. I recommend everybody to read Stephen Kinzer's Poisoner-in-Chief, the Sidney Gottlieb and the CIA Search for Mind Control, which talks about the importation of Sidney Gottlieb, a Nazi war criminal, basically, to expand the CIA chemical weapon knowledge, the mind control, the MKUltra project, etc. Japanese and Nazi war criminals were brought into America to work on these programs, right? This is very well known. The Ukrainian Nazis were effectively protected and given shelter and incubated within Ukraine and various other countries bordering Ukraine post-World War II in preparation for the potential of war against then the Soviet Union, but later, of course, Russia. And this has all been described, by the way, in the Rand papers in 2019, which coincide, of course, with the election of Zelensky. Zelensky has been running particularly persecution of opposition inside Ukraine. As I said, political assassinations, assassination or disappearance of media, opposition media, anyone who speaks out against the Nazi elements, against the fascism, against the terrorization and the ethnic cleansing program in the east of Ukraine, they are in danger of being disappeared, tortured, or executed. I have a Bulgarian journalist friend, Deliana Gaitanjeva, who did a lot of the early investigation into the biolabs. And she told me that Bulgarian nationals have also been executed and tortured if they oppose military operation against Donbass. So, you know, Zelensky is effectively, he's absorbed also, you know, he's not only a stooge. I mean, he's sold off, I think it's 17 million hectares of Ukrainian land to the big multinational corporate giants like Monsanto. He has multi-million properties globally. You know, the guy also has been heavily involved in the money laundering operations inside Ukraine. He he has an absolute agenda against, for example, the Communist Party. And we shouldn't forget that the Nazis in World War II actually went up against the Communists before they even started the persecution of the Jews. So, you know, while people sort of say, yeah, but how can he, you know, how can he be supporting Nazi elements when he himself is a Jew? Well, Kolomoisky, who put him in power, has a dual passport, even three passports, I think. But he has an Israeli passport, right? And the Zionist Nazi collaboration goes way back, by the way, to even the 1920s, when then Petlura, who was the president of the Ukrainian Republic, collaborated with Jabotinsky, who was one of the very early Zionist or founders of the Zionist movement, and enabled him to have a Jewish military and Jewish militia on the basis that if there were a threat from Russia, then they would unite. Yeah. So, and this is all historically documented. So people shouldn't be surprised by this. And Zelensky has effectively, you know, he's iconized Stepan Bandera, who of course was instrumental in the massacres of the Jews. He's iconized various Nazi prominent figures in the Nazi movement. He has absorbed the Azov and Idar Nazi battalions into the military structure. So, you know, of course, the argument always is, oh, yeah, but there's Nazi elements everywhere in the world. Yeah, but they're not institutionalized.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting too about
the governance of the country. Yeah.
Right. What's interesting about the Nazi elements in Ukraine too is the way legacy media has responded to it. So I did on my on my podcast, which is called Trish, What is Critical? I read a compilation of all the times pre this war that legacy media talked about the Nazi elements in Ukraine, right? You can find them everywhere historically if you just do a Google search, right? The minute that the powers that be wanted that narrative to change, the very same news outlets were questioning the existence, and anybody who mentioned that was a conspiracy theorist, right? They'd say, oh, you know, because remember that that Putin said we want to denazify, and they're like, oh, you know, he's just crazy. There's no Nazis in Ukraine. And the very same news outlets had been reporting on it, you know, a year before.
Exactly.
It was just shameless.
You know, it's what is also extraordinary. I mean, we saw it in Syria with the normalization of terrorism, basically. You know, effectively, just to give you one example, there was a photographer who was given the Getty Award, who was actually a member of Nur al-Din Zinki, a terrorist group that was funded by the US up until, I think it was 2016, when they were filmed beheading a 12-year-old Palestinian child in August 2016 in Aleppo. And this guy was given a Getty Award for photography. Well, guess what? The Azov battalion photographer has also just been given a Getty Award. You know, they've been platformed by, I think, at Stanford University, Azov battalion members. So Nazis are being bandied around by Stanford EDU, right? And exactly the same thing happened in Syria. Al-Qaeda or Ar al-Sham, an offshoot of Al-Qaeda, the leader, Labib al-Nahas, was given, I think it was the Washington Post, but I could be wrong. But anyway, he was definitely given a platform in American and UK media. So, you know, I tweeted out the other day, I said, I just find it depressing that I'm having to argue that Nazis are bad. And in Syria, I had to argue that Al-Qaeda is bad. But why am I having to do this? Because the media is effectively whitewashing them. They're presenting them as family men, or as, you know, there's reports being put out as Azov battalion prisoners hugging their wives. There's an art display of Azov battalion fallen soldiers. You know, I mean, I find it so profoundly disturbing that we are being led or gaslighted by the legacy media into thinking that these are the good guys. These are guys who were leading ethnic cleansing programs who were on a daily basis torturing and humiliating, for example, the Romani population in Ukraine. These are the people who burned alive people in Odessa and in Mariupol, you know? I mean...
I sense your frustration with it. And as you were saying that, I was just thinking about how we are all now kind of struggling with an element of cognitive dissonance, because things that represent either a level of moral bankruptcy or cruelty are being absolutely accepted and kind of mainlined into the culture now. It's a hop, skip, and a jump from let your grandmother die alone because we're not going to let you in because COVID, to let's support the Nazis because, you know, Zelensky's good and Putin's bad. That's kind of where we are. It's very destabilizing, you know.
And, you know, in Canada, you have Chrystia Freeland who you know.
Nightmare.
Championed the locking up your grandmother, who championed Al-Qaeda and the White Helmets in Syria, who has a Nazi legacy, right, and who herself has worked for the Bandera Press in Ukraine.
Vanessa, thank you. We got to scoot, but you're absolutely right about Xi. And I'm going to say goodbye. And tell me where is your main contact for people who want to find your work quickly?
Most people can find me on Vanessa Bealey at Substack or on my Patreon. Those are the two main ones. Oh, and my Telegram channel.
Brilliant. Keep on going. Thanks so much for doing this. We'll talk again soon. Thanks, Vanessa.